That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 104 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 9th of September, 2022. Foilte Steach, I am Conal O'Moran. We all want a better health service, and Professor Martin Curley's episode, that's episode 103 of That Great Business Show, has seen a massive reaction. That's the second time, because he was also on with us on episode 90, and he was so good, we had to have him back on again. No doubt, that's because Martin says he's going to bring our health system from 80th, that's 80, in the world, to number one, that's number one, in Europe. Anyone interested in health here or worldwide should listen to the five companies Martin lined up to explain what they're doing to revolutionize healthcare for all of us. And as we do with Team GBS, we will be introducing those companies with the US in mind to Advanced CT. That's Connecticut's version of Enterprise Ireland. They want all Irish companies heading for the States to base themselves in a beautiful Connecticut. It is really beautiful, which is also equidistant from New York and Boston, and probably our nearest state as the crow flies. You can contact me anytime for more information about that. And as I always ask, do please share episode 103 and all of the other episodes to help keep the pressure on the powers that be to actually deliver a proper health service to all citizens. And of course, you can share this episode too. This is episode 104, where we will be taking a tea break with a woman who is finding new ways of making us take tea. I love tricks of the trade, and we have a business that makes us buy, probably what we don't want as we queue in the local convenience store. And I keep being asked about how best to name or promote a brand. We listen to your requests, and we have an expert to answer those questions for you. And all of these great tips and insights are brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil. Taking a business trip abroad soon? A tiny, security-friendly bottle of DeFacto Shaving Oil is your ideal traveling companion, taking up so little room in your wash bike. Buy it today, defactoshave.com.
That Great Business Show, Irish Podcast Awards 2022. Best Business Podcast nominee. DeFacto Shaving Oil, smooth as.
As I do when I'm about to interview someone on the podcast, I look up their LinkedIn page to see if I can spot anything unusual about them. And my first guest on this episode gave me a laugh when I saw that she has done as many career pirouettes as a professional ballet dancer. She has earned first-class honours in theatre studies in London. She then earned more first-class honours at the College of Marketing and Design in Dublin. She went on to be a flight services manager with British Midland Airlines, and she still trains people in public speaking. But the bit that got a chuckle out of me is that under her education heading, she has Terranure Enterprise Centre, and that is where Nicola Kearns, boss of NixT, started her business 10 years ago. And I wonder what lessons she learnt there, because in what I imagine is a crowded and cutthroat market, NixT has gone on to earn award after award after award, so much so that they have moved from the Terranure Enterprise Centre to their premises in Rathcoole on the outskirts of Dublin, where they continue to expand their tea empire. Nicola Kearns, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much, Conal. I'm absolutely delighted to be here this afternoon.
Did you think I was going to say that you were a ballet dancer on top of everything?
Well, when you were mentioning pirouettes there, which I do quite a few pirouettes, but not in a professional way. I did a few this morning before I even came in here around the warehouse.
Well, speaking of the Terranure Enterprise Centre, I love the idea that you had learnt your education, that you were educated there, because that actually just was your business base.
It was actually, and it was a great education actually, even
what
though
did
the business
you learn?
Was, well, you just the basics of business, the mistakes you can make, the things you learn really, I suppose, is growing a business. The Enterprise Centre, it kind of takes you by the hand. There are people there when you have things that you're trying to sort out, logistics or branding or making new contacts, they're really supportive in Turner Enterprise Centre and you feel part of a community. So sometimes being in business on your own, because I had no staff when I started off, so I'd every hat on basically. You know, there was people there that might be good at marketing or social media. They did lots of those courses and everything. So, you know, you didn't really feel as much on your own. You know, it was nice to be part of a community of business people that kind of, even though they were in different businesses, we're all going through the same thing. We're all learning the same thing.
And they all look after you.
Exactly, exactly. We all have each other's back, really, you know. And if someone's not having a good day or having a good day, we celebrate the good times and we help each other through the not so good times.
Now, I gave you a very long CV there, but I don't see any connection with tea. Where did the tea come from?
Well, I worked for British Midland for 10 years. We were the first tranche of cabin crew based in Dublin. So that took me travelling quite a lot, mostly through Europe, to be honest. And that's where I really did discover that there was a great big world of beautiful teas out there, because we would travel to lots of really nice cities and there were tea shops. And, you know, really, I just started picking up different teas. And then when I wanted to start my own business, it took me a while to think of what I really wanted to go into something that I really cared about. So I you know, thought long and hard about it.
Well, go back one step and tell me, you're sitting, you've got a nice career in British Midland.
I had a very nice career.
And then what made you decide to be mad enough? Because I do say to people, you know, you're nuts if you wanted to go into business on your own.
Crazy.
But yes. I also say you're nuts not to.
Yeah.
So what made
I think
you?
It was something that I always wanted to do from my very early. Originally, I trained as a buyer in Arnott's, actually, and I did retail marketing.
That's not on your CV.
It's probably going back too far. They probably don't have a century for that.
But there is a retail background. And was anybody in your family, were they entrepreneurs?
No. Well, my mother is 84, still has her own accountancy practice,
so
believe
she is
it or
an
not.
Entrepreneur.
Yeah, so I do come from a, you know, and she's a very strong lady and, you know, very enterprising. So I probably picked that up from her, actually.
And fantastic. She's 84 and still practicing.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Would she come in and talk to us?
She probably would, all right.
Well, she is invited. You better give her a name because...
Joan Shanley.
Well, if Joan Shanley wants to come in, I love that because imagine all the changes that she has seen.
Oh, she's so inspiring. Yeah. And even today, you can, you know, she never misses all the political programs on TV, reads
love
the papers from cover to cover. You know, she would really, you know, she's very, very with it now. A hard act to follow, but look, you know, you try your best.
Tell me the tea story. You decide... In a moment of madness, I'm going to create a tea brand.
Yeah. Well, I knew I loved tea, so I kind of had that in my head.
But
wasn't quite sure how.
You probably love clothes or, I don't know, sunglasses or something.
I'm very into health. I'm kind of, I play a lot of sports. I like to keep healthy. It kind of ticked a lot of those boxes, really. I think at the time when I started, there'd been a kind of a downturn as well. And, you know, I think people were kind of appreciating their health more. They may not be going abroad as much or taking 5 or 6 weekends a year, but they might buy themselves a nice luxury kind of for entertaining at home or, you know, something like a luxury brand of something. And I felt that was kind of in the air because that was the way I'd probably be myself even, you know. And
you can guess that you stuck your finger in the air to do your market research, or did you do anything any more than that?
No, the finger in the air was actually a very, very... I tell you what, I was actually in Spain with my mum and my brother, and it was kind of like a bit of an epiphany I had. I had an interest, but I was sitting in a lovely outdoor cafe and somebody handed me a tea menu, which I'd never seen before. It was a normal little cafe in Spain and the tea was served in a beautiful little basket, like in a mug. And I looked and I thought, this is amazing. You know, we need this in Ireland. We haven't got this in Ireland. Surely, if I love it, somebody else would love it. And my brother and my mum were speaking. My father had actually passed away and we were overdoing tying up some legal stuff and went with my mum. And I kind of felt it was my dad saying to me, this is you know, I really felt him. Like, you know,
this is for you.
It's very hard. You know, people sometimes think that's a bit mad, but also he's the only person that ever called me Nick. And that's why I called it Nick's Tea. So okay. I know my name is Nicola, but nobody else ever called me Nick. So it kind of came to me and I just said, do you know, I know what I'm going to do. And my brother and my mom looked at me and said, like, what are you talking about? And I said, I'm going to start a tea company and I'm going to call it Nick's Tea. And it was like that. And that was it. I just went 100 miles an hour after that. I just had it in my head. I knew what I was going to do.
And how do you go 100 miles an hour into the tea business? Because like, what did you start doing?
I know, there was nothing, like I wasn't buying it here or anything. So, I mean, I did a lot of research. I went to quite a few trade shows that would have premium teas. And I mean, as I say, it is quite big in Europe. So it's not that I have to go to China and India and walk around the field. Not quite. I didn't quite have to do that. You know, there's tea brokers and you can buy really good teas that are all certified and organic and the paperwork's all done for them. When you're a bit smaller, you know, you're not going to bring a container of green tea in. You just wouldn't, you know, to go out of date before you'd sell it.
I mean, are you talking a container as in...
As a 20-foot container, so...
That's a lot of tea.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, thankfully I buy it in nice big bulk boxes now, but at the time, no.
Yet, I say.
Yet, oh no. Yeah. That is hopefully on the horizon, but...
So talk to me about the very, very early days that you are walking around the trade show in wherever, Frankfurt or where are these trade shows held?
Frankfurt.
I made that up.
France, no, Frankfurt is a really good hub for the Messe Frankfurt. Like, they had really good shows and I came across about three really good companies there and two of them I have been my main suppliers for the last 10 years, which
and
is great.
You go up to them and say, my name is Nicola Kearns. I don't have a business. Will you give me some tea?
Well, now, Conal, I did actually print some business cards off some sort of machine somewhere. I printed about 100 of them because I said, I can't go over here and say I'm opening a tea business. So I went over and said, I have a tea business.
Good for you. Fake it till you make it.
Exactly. I should have kept one, actually. I should have kept... Like the way you keep the branding, you know, the story evolving.
Yeah.
I should have kept the business cards evolving there as well, the different designs.
Maybe your pals in Germany might still have it.
They probably have.
So you go up to them and you say, listen, can I have some tea?
Yeah, I'd like to open an account with you. Would you supply me tea? I'm based in Dublin. What are your terms? You know, can you send me your price lists? You know, as if I knew exactly what I was talking about.
My very question. Who told you what questions to ask?
No one really. I just kind of winged it a bit, I suppose. You know, I didn't really know anybody in the food. Not like now. I know so many great colleagues and supporters in the food business. The Dublin Food Chain is a great place and for all of us together and network and everything. But at the time, I actually knew nobody in the food business.
So these Germans did not, or whoever they were in Germany, did not say no.
No, no, they were delighted to have me.
And you're still 10 years later, you're still doing business with them. So they're obviously nice and good.
Yeah, they're good. I think if you, it's a bit like anything. Like, I look after my suppliers. I pay them on time. I try not to put them under too much pressure and say, I've just run out of something, you know, like we work together very well. And I think it's the same, you know, that chain has to go that, like, I look after our customers as well. And you like to think that they will at the same time, you know, order and pay you on time. And when you've got that kind of built up over the years, you know, it actually works very well, you know. And as the business has grown, obviously the orders have grown and, you know, it's
big, as a matter of curiosity, was that first order? Can you remember?
Oh, I'd say it was very small.
Value? 1,000 quid? More?
Probably about 1,500 euro. You had to order a certain amount anyway. I think I was probably nearly having nightmares placing that order I wouldn't blink today. But at that time, I had a limited amount of money. I think I had about 10 or 12,000 euro in savings. And I kind of thought, you know, when you're actually writing that of your own money, I know it's the business, but you're kind of going, this better work now. I better sell this because I need this money back.
It's like going to the casino and putting everything on
exactly.
Black 8 or whatever.
I needed a website, you know, and that money, you know, I had to be very, you can be very creative with branding and marketing when you have a small budget. It's amazing how creative you can be.
I agree.
You know, and
so that was back then. So tell me a little bit about the journey onwards. What were the big learnings tell us one of the disasters. You must have had a disaster.
Oh, I've had branding disasters, but that would have been,
what did you do
like
wrong?
I went to farmers markets initially with like these little cello bags and this awful branding, but beautiful tea in it, you know, and trying to blend things as well. Like I buy in some teas, but actually I started blending teas as well. Like, you know, for the Irish market, we kind of might want something slightly different from Germans or French or Norwegians or whatever. And, you know, like some of the, I remember the first time going to a farmer's market and I'd bought a gazebo and like, sure, I didn't even know. I could hardly lift it out of the van. Didn't everyone was whipping up their gazebos at the farmer's market and I was standing there. And I was going, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, I had all the gear, but I hadn't a clue what to do with it. But, you know, they were good. You know, it was slow and you got good feedback. And I'm trying to think of what a real disaster would be. I'm sure I've bought in teas that were just horrendous. And I know the branding journey in the early days, when I look back, I think, oh my God, how did I think that was lovely? You know, the way, so it's a bit like looking in your wardrobe sometimes. You know?
That seems like a good idea.
How did I buy that? Oh, I'll keep it for another 10 years, it'll come back.
So skip forward to the now.
Yeah.
How big are you now?
Well, I don't know. I've done quite a big expansion over the last, since COVID actually.
I decided to
go big or go home, as they say. And, you know, I was trucking along very nicely, moved from Turnier Enterprise Centre and moved up to a nice warehouse in Green Oak. It's a fantastic hub up there. And that was a big move. And I remember moving in and everything I had was in a corner of this warehouse. And I thought, how am I going to fill this? Well, now, I'd love you to come up and see it, Conal. Now, it's nice and neat and tidy, but it's definitely full.
Wow.
You know, which...
Of tea.
Full of tea.
And
yeah.
Bits, because you don't just do tea.
Well, I only do tea now. During COVID, I did do an online organic food shop. Very passionate about organic food and, you know, just as a, like 40% of my business is food service to hotels, cafes, restaurants. So that kind of went.
And they want Nick's tea on their menu.
Yes. Yeah.
So in fact, you have created a brand.
Oh, yeah.
A successful brand.
Yeah.
Recognized brand.
Yeah.
Which means that the likes of other brands, be that Barry's or Campbell's or some of these other ones, probably hate you.
No, I wouldn't think I'm that much of a threat, actually. I'd love if I was that big to be that much of a threat that they'd,
A couple of generations ago, Barry's Tea started off just as you did.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that. I do look at it in the supermarkets where if I'm in, you know, just went across there to Tesco to have a look at my stock there.
What does that feel like?
Well, it's amazing, but they were out of one of my blends, so I said, I better go back to the manager after this and say, would you mind ordering that in? But do you know, it's actually amazing. And I don't think I'll ever stop that kind of, get that feeling that I'm there beside, say, like Barry's Tea. And I do look and I go, you know, that started. They're over 100 years old. Like, if I'm still going 100 years, I'm sure, you know, there's definitely, it's just nice to be there with all those other teas. I'm very small, but you know something, I'm probably punching a bit above my weight in terms of the size of the company. But look, it's still on the shelf and it's great.
And how are you managing to grow, to get that growth?
I made a lot of investment during COVID. I just decided I was outsourcing my tea bags. They're all biodegradable. There's a few key things I'd say I did. I decided that we needed to make them in-house. There's nobody really doing it in Ireland on the same level. So I bought a tea bag making machine. I bought a...
Where do you buy a tea
in China.
Okay.
Now, I researched. I had to do a lot of research again. Again, like you pay for everything up front. Like, I just paid and crossed my fingers. Somebody told me I was mad, but that was after I'd paid for it, unfortunately.
And then six weeks later or something, this thing chugs into
it. It actually got stuck in the river. Remember, the boat got stuck in the river and everything. It was on a slow boat from China, actually. It was a stuck boat from China. But anyway, it eventually arrived in November. I remember taking it arriving and I'm going, oh my God, I'm going to actually have to figure out how to work this because there isn't another one here. And I think I had it for about a month. I was looking at it and we were running out of tea bags. And I said to Hannah, who's been with me now a couple of years, I said, we're going to have to switch the tea bag on now fairly soon, Hannah. And she goes, oh, yes, that's right. And I said, well, she goes, yes, I'm just packing the tea. She said, like, basically, I am not doing that. You know, and I spent about 3 weeks on my knees, up and down a ladder, and eventually got it to work.
How big is this machine? Like, is it 6 foot high or 10 foot high?
Yeah, you'd have to get up on a ladder. Like, there's four big weighers, and then that vibrates and goes down a tunnel, and then, goes down a tube. And then I bought another piece of equipment.
Hang on a second now. We're never that crass. We don't actually ask people about their money and stuff.
Yeah.
Is a tea bag maker or whatever, is it expensive?
It's pretty expensive now. I did quite a bit of investment, you know, but I felt like the company was actually doing very well. It's not a, you know what I mean? Like it's self-financed, put it that way. Cool. So, that's, you know, nice. And I felt...
And did you borrow or did you, who, did anybody help you? No Leos or anything like that?
Oh, no, I did actually, now that I come to think of it, I forgot about that.
You owe somebody money.
I do. It's obviously not giving me sleepless nights because I forgot. Do you know, I went to a great company. Is it Swoop?
There is a Swoop, yes.
Yeah.
We haven't had them on, but
they
we
will fantastic.
Be. Okay.
I think it was started by this lady. I'm not sure whether she was in Enterprise Ireland or it was there. Fantastic company. They happened to contact me by chance if you're looking for finance. And they kind of go and try and broker with the banks for you.
Okay.
Very small fee, to be honest. Now, I did say, look...
There are repayments, though. Do you remember
that
part?
There are, yeah.
Yeah, you've gotten those, haven't you?
Well, I fund probably half it and I borrowed half it.
Fabulous.
I've never borrowed for the business and I just kind of said, look, it's doing well. You know, it's an investment.
Well, there's you and Hannah and how many others?
I have two more now.
That's not bad, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, like, no, it's great.
Like, as I explained to people, 1 to 2, that's 100% growth.
Yeah.
2 to 4 is another 100% growth.
Yeah, no, I've been very lucky. Gene started, he started at the beginning of the year when I had the tea bag machine. I knew like we needed more packing. And then I was asked, there was a local Ukrainian lady that had come over with her son, was staying with a local lady in Rathcoole. And they said, look, if you have any work for her. Yeah. And I said, well, as it happens, you know, we went into the, this year, actually, because the teabag machine, we got into the Grow with Aldi program in May.
Good,
so I did the 2 weeks
you.
In May. So there was a lot of packing in that.
Yeah.
So
and did that
I arrived
well?
Just at the right time.
Did Aldi work for you?
I think that it was a fantastic experience. There was 25 of us only picked this year. And there was 57 last year. So it was quite competitive to get in.
Yeah.
But I think in the interview, one of the first questions I was asked was, well, where are these made? And I said, well, actually, we make them ourselves. So
that's fantastic.
I think if I didn't say that and I said, oh, well, we're outsourcing in Poland or whatever, or Romania, or wherever lots of people are outsourcing to, I don't think we would have had the same... sort of interest. But it was great. It provided employment and Alice still with us and Jean and that. So kind of just really, it kind of confirmed to me that we needed this machine.
The future. Discuss.
The future. Discuss.
It's like you're leaving Zurich.
Yes. Oh God. what do I want to do when I leave work? Is it? Or not the leaving cert. Well, I went and bought another machine, which has a conveyor belt going from this one.
You know, the noose has just got tighter around.
Yeah,
again,
I know. I realised anyway. There's a conveyor belt that goes up from this machine, brings the tea bags, drops them down, and puts them into a little individual wrapper.
Okay.
Because we had started doing for hotels for bedrooms, and I feel this is very lucrative. part of the business.
The ones that are sitting there, yeah.
And the Wren Hotel is the most sustainable hotel in Ireland, built from the ground up on the old Andrews Lane theatre site.
I know it well.
And because sustainability, which I was, is our other, one of my, I'm very passionate about, we're the only plastic-free, compostable, biodegradable outer wrapper and inner. So they obviously wanted our teas. So I can see a big future in that. And I think we can be very versatile in that. And also for the grab and go, we can use them for a lot of, that this machine is going to add a lot of strings to our bow.
Export?
Export. I'm going to Sial in October for 2 days.
That's the big food exhibition.
Yeah, and definitely going to, no.
It's a massive food exhibition.
It is, and yeah. I'm going for 2 days. 1 day with the Dublin Food Chain, but I actually booked to go for 2 days because I feel if I'm over there, look, make it worth your while.
Sure.
But very pleased. Just awarded Gold Origin Green status.
And fantastic. The, congratulations.
The ceremony is in about 2 weeks. So that's, you know, it's making a difference and, you know, and all that whole sustainable sort of piece, I think we're doing it really well. So I'm seeing the future in that, going down that route, you know, the Love Irish Food route, we're going to become part of their group now as well this year. So a lot has happened this year. So I kind of really see we're kind of just now ready for export. Thinking about it for years, but I feel I've a much better kind of concept of where we can go now with the export. Well, we need to do it to you know, to keep everything going.
You have an idea what you're doing, you mean, after 10 years?
Well, not really, no. You know, I'm very adventurous, like, you know what I mean? I will, like, I'm not, or what do people say? You're very spontaneous, you know, like maybe, you know, I kind of get an idea. You said to me, what are my worst things? I have done loads of things that are bad, but, you know, I've probably obliterated them from my mind.
Going to be listening, don't say that.
Yeah.
Come here to me. Final question that we ask all our guests is, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Right.
She's looking at her notes. You're meant to know this.
Well, I do, but I you know, I have the name written down here and I'm quite in awe of this company, Paddy McKillen Jr.
Okay,
from the Press Up Group.
We know of them, yeah, because they are just getting bigger.
I am just flabbergasted and I just think the standards they have the, you know, I love going into any of their hotels, bars. You just know it's just very kind of premium. It's nice, you know, their cinemas are lovely. There's just a real luxury feel from everything they do.
That they're now branching out into the area outside of Dublin and they've now gone into the UK. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool. I mean, I would absolutely, obviously love to do business with them because I think we have a great premium feel tea that they would love. But, you know, I just think they, you know, at a time even when things aren't so great, like we hear all the time about the doom and gloom. I mean, they are just slicing right through the doom and gloom, aren't they really? You know, and I just admire them so much. And I think he must be some guy to be leading that. I really admire him. And if I had him on the next tea team, oh my God, I can't imagine.
Well, that is Nicola Kern, CEO of Nick's Teas and maybe the future employer of Paddy McKillen Jr. Do you think? Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, if
he needs
only.
You. He needs
that's dream
you.
Stuff.
He needs you. Okay. Nicola, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
That Great Business Show, Irish Podcast Awards 2022. Best Business Podcast nominee.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25-milliliter bottle of DeFacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DeFactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRedCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRedCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That Great Business Show.
Regulars will know I'm a sucker for what I like to think is inside information. That's why we had Brian Donaldson, boss at Mexol, on to tell us how service stations really make money. That was a few episodes ago. And we've asked many, many others the same question over the last 2 years. On this episode, we're about to learn how sneaky retailers make us buy stuff we don't want while we queue to pay for the goods that we do want. This type of business is called impulse purchase queue systems. And our insider who's going to dish the dirt is Mark Fitzpatrick, founder of QFITS, that works with a host of big companies we know and love. Mark's knowledge is what makes us part with an extra 10 or 20 euro every time we join a line, as the Americans would say. Mark Fitzpatrick, picker of pockets, welcome to that great business show.
Thanks a million for that introduction.
Everybody hates you, you know.
I do. It's a common thing when you're talking about taking money out of people's pockets, but in the right manner.
And you do it very cleverly because there's a lot of science in it.
Very much. A huge amount of science behind retailing in general. But when it comes down to, I suppose, impulse buy, it is very marketed in the right way. When we look at, I suppose, impulse buy and queuing and going into forecourts, you're going in to pay for your petrol and your fuel. That's your goal or your end destination. So how we get more money out of your pockets is by building queues and impulse buy and making the customer journey advantageous towards, I suppose, the retailer rather than the customer.
Correct. So you're going to take money off me, and that's why you make me snake around places and all the rest.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
You have told me that there are, it's not that straightforward. It's not just like putting me into a U-shaped queue. What are you doing to me when I'm queuing up?
We're taking the customer journey. I suppose if you talk about retailing is probably one of the oldest marketing tricks in the book. Years and years ago when my father was in retailing, you would put the bread and the sugar down the back and
that's
the milk down the back.
That still goes.
Still true today. Because you have to walk through the store to get to the items you want to get. And the chances are you're going to see something else that you want to pick up and purchase it. And that is impulse buying dated back in the 70s, 80s, even probably pre that date. Now it's more of a science, and the science behind it is kind of picking, okay, if you're coming into a store, we want you to walk through the store in a certain manner. So what are the two or three things that you want to do when you come into a forecourt, which is by background a speciality? You're either going in to buy a sandwich because it's lunchtime and it's the nearest thing that has a good deli, or you're going in to pay for your fuel because you've just, obviously you might be on the road and you might be doing a couple of different things. So if you're queuing to buy a sandwich, and you're finishing your transaction at the end of the deli where the till is, chances are you probably did want a bag of crisps, or you might have wanted a packet of chewing gum.
Chances are that you didn't.
Or you might want to go back to the office and bring, you know, a surprise back to the office with a bag of sweets. So if you go into a good deli in a forecourt, the deli is going to finish the transaction, but you're not going to queue again to get your chewing gum or your drink or your packet of crisps. So what we do is we put all that stuff, the stuff that we think you might want, before you finish into the queuing, before you finish a transaction. So realistically, what we're doing is looking at what you might want and giving it to you.
But how do you, or what do you base that on, of what I might want? Does that affect chewing gum? I mean, is that a big seller item or a small, or is that?
A significant seller
His
item.
His eyes went to heaven there. It's like, you love chewing gum, I can see.
Yeah. It's very good for the retailers, and it's a big pickup product.
Chewing gum?
Yeah.
If I had my way, I'd ban it.
Well, most people are going to meetings. You have a sandwich with maybe some onions or something that you kind of need some chewing gum before you go to your meeting or something that you're talking to. Crisps, again, are a big thing. And also to have a drink. Because out of maybe five or six products, when you go to buy a sandwich at a deli, these are the other things that two or three of them out of the five or six you might pick, because they complement each other. So it's about a ranging process and a complementary ranging progress to where you are in the actual forecourt. Now, it's slightly different to when you're going through the pay for your fuel. because you haven't gone in to get a sandwich, but you haven't you want to finish your transaction. So we look at straight line queues. So if you think about going into a garage and there's nothing in your way, you can go straight up to the till, pay for your fuel and get out. You've done what you wanted to do. Your transaction is finished. Perfect.
And Mark Fitzpatrick hates that.
Yes. And so do retailers. So,
but I still, I can imagine that over the weekend I probably paid for fuel and that I did go straight to the counter. So in fact, not everybody is doing or using your queuing system.
No. No, and there
big are... Big mistake, isn't that what you're going to say?
Absolutely a big mistake. There are other people that do queuing systems. I don't think they do it with the knowledge that we would have in retail. My background would be retail, and I grew up
do in explain
retail.
Where that retail is, because this is interesting for anybody in Dublin anyway.
Yeah.
Your family used to own the...
The Shopping Basket.
And I remember them.
Yeah, so we had 6 supermarkets, 3 delis. From the age of 8, 42 years ago, I was packing shelves and sweeping floors and learning a trade that I thought I would hate. I certainly hated it in my mid-teens, let me tell you. But yeah, I grew up in that environment of retailing and being in the shops. And I learned so much that I didn't know I was learning while in that environment. I swore in my early 20s I'd never get into retail. And now I absolutely love it. I eat it up. I love the forecourt retail specifically. So yeah, that's been my background. So I've kind of I sleep and eat retail in a big way. And my wife is involved in the telco retail environment. So we talk about retail quite a lot at home. We're quite boring to a lot of other people, but we love it.
What is telco retail? Just for my own curiosity.
So Vodafone.
Oh, okay, all right, okay,
well,
I was thinking about retailing and telephone. No, I know what you're saying. So back to how or what are you doing differently to those people who do allow me to go straight to the till?
So we change a customer journey is the big thing.
That's you just
the,
make me go around like in a big
kind of an S. We call it the small S. So if you're looking at your destination and you're going to, you said you went up to a straight line queue and the other day, you're basically looking at the till and you want to get up there, finish your transaction, get out the door. If we change the way you walk into the store and you have to corral yourself into our queuing system, we've changed what you're looking at. You're not looking at your end destination. You're looking at what's in my way. So what is in your way is very good and very affordable special offers from our retailers. Because
I knew when I saw you, I hated you. But
so you might want a bag of chocolates, or you might want a pack of crisps. Or,
no, I don't. I want to get out.
Or you might want some chewing gum. There's massive teams behind the people I work with in the forecourt arena around the planning and the planograms. And like, it's not a case that we're making you buy something. It's the essence of what retail is.
But you also told me something about the positioning of the boxes and stuff like that I have to reach and stuff like that. Or what was that about?
Yeah, so I suppose you'd look at the companies, confectionery companies. They spend millions on their fonts and their colours and getting it right. And what's the most appealing? How can we get your attention?
What works?
What they do works. Really good marketing teams putting all these colours and stuff together. Advertising on top of that added in together with the right colours of the products. But when our shelving shows the product at an angle, so you're not looking at a flat angle, you're looking at a shelf that is looking up at you, which is saying, buy me. It's telling you, these colours are saying, buy me, I'm very tasty. You really want to have a bit of me in your car. And that's really what we do. There's other elements of the science behind it, which means where we lower the actual queuing system for the staff to see into the store, which from a shrinkage point of view, which is from people taking stuff that not paid for.
Great phrase, shrinkage. It's called theft.
Theft, yeah. Which reduces down the theft element because staff can see into the store.
Because theft is huge.
It is. Well, it's across the board. It's an element of retailing that you have to take on board. Some places are better than others. Some places are worse than others. There's no getting away from that.
So you have now dropped the eye level.
Yeah,
so they
down
can see
to
across.
Hip
okay.
level.
Hip level.
Yeah. Yeah, so our units are 998 high, so just under a metre high.
Okay.
But we can maximise, with a queuing system in a large store, we add 8.4 metres of retailing of confectionery and products to our clients. And we have increased across the board to most of our clients, a sales increase of up to about 20%. And we did with one store, we put it in just before a bank holiday weekend. And when I called in the week after, they were like, oh, we love you. We need you in more stores. Now, it was a bank holiday weekend. They had exceptionally busy weekend. But of course, I'm going to say that was all me.
You also have some very, very big name clients.
We do. We do. So we work with the likes of Circle K. We've just signed a contract with Apple Green. So that goes
huge. Oh, good man. You got it. Good.
Yeah, huge okay, potential. Also in queuing in the aviation industry, we work with the DAA. So we work with Dublin Airport, Cork Airport, Knock Airport. I did
Talk
get several
to me about
phone
airports.
Calls.
I went through an airport the other day. And what are you doing to me there? I mean, it drives me nuts, but yeah. You love that.
Oh, yeah. But we got calls a couple of times there over while the everything was going wrong at Dublin Airport. They were like, what are you doing wrong? And I'm like, I'm not doing anything wrong.
But of course.
It's like, we help Dublin Airport. We give them more queuing posts to corral people through. So we corral people through the security area. So
that's separate altogether to the retailing?
Yeah, completely separate. So that's just a post with a retractable belt barrier.
And that's a
very
business.
Fancy branding.
Oh, I did see that. And I saw Grant Thornton, I think, on
this. Yes, they would be the fast track post that we do.
Yeah. You see? I noticed.
Yeah.
Are you very impressed?
Yeah, absolutely.
But sure, I mean... That is a business. I mean, there's always a business in everything that I eventually find out. I never thought I would have imagined that DAA owned their own little pulley out.
They buy them from me, yeah. We got the contract. We won the tender contract. It was the first big contract I got.
So you're not actually monitoring them or pulling them out or anything like that?
No. They have in-house people or in-house companies that work with them to put the queuing posts in position.
And do you know anything about the science of that kind of queuing?
I would know, yeah. Queuing is about corralling people and how
it's about upsetting people.
If they hadn't got the queuing post, they would be very upset, let me tell you. There is a science behind it, but although Dublin Airport had problems in the last couple of months, they are very good at the queuing element of their business. Also like Cork Airport and Irish West Airport in Knock. They are more expertise that have more expertise in that line of business than I would have, and because when you're on the ground and doing that work day in day out, you become an expert in that field, if you like.
And DAA has an international business. Have you managed to go international with them?
We've done work with SSP, which would be the retail side of the DAA. So all the kind of drinks and the food elements behind after you go through the boarding gates or the check-in gates, and that. It's run by SSP, and we have the contract with them, and we've supplied them with queuing posts around their kind of food halls and drinking areas, if you like. So
I'm thinking aloud here of how can I get the better of your systems, plural, as in, is there a way that like does click and pick up, or what do you call that thing?
Click and collect.
Does that get around your system?
It obviously would, because you haven't got people in the store.
But I still have to go in and collect.
You still have to go in and collect. It depends on what the volume. It's really down to volume of people that we deal with.
Yeah.
And it's how we deal with the different problems that people have in the different areas. Other clients of mine would be like the Aviva Stadium, Crow Park, Guinness Storehouse.
Is that for your pulley out things? Not for
the retractable belt barriers again. Yeah. So there's kind of two, or well, there's four or five different sides of the business, but they all stem from a queuing post. So the queuing post, which is your retractable belt barrier, is what we put our queuing, our in-queue management system on, which is the impulse buy queuing system. So they all kind of stem from each other. We also do the coffee shop barriers for outside coffee shops with their branding on it. We did some of that for Kildare Village and from other independent retailers, that, especially during And when we're just coming out of the pandemic and people were massively looking for coffee barricades, they're called windbreakers.
I know those things.
Yeah, so we do an awful lot of them. But a lot of our business stems from the queuing post and how we can add to that to make it a different product and put it into a different environment. So
when you're driving around looking at the outside of retail stores or any retail setting, are you imagining other ways that you're pulling out things? You keep calling them fancy
retractable
names,
belt barriers.
RBBs. I'm sure you call them RBBs. Are you thinking of new ways of using them, getting them sold, getting them into locations?
Yeah, branding is a big part of what we do. And when we're talking about, moving people, if we can move people and give them a brand element to it, like what we did for the Guinness Storehouse, we have very in-depth branding elements in the webbing, which means that Guinness are very protective about their brand. We do with all of our clients. We show them what the brand finished article will look like in a PDF. We get that signed off. We do a sample, and if the sample is good enough, they'll sign off. And we've got the harp perfectly in Guinness Storehouse, and the brand is really, really strong. So that's a big part of what we do.
And how are you? Where are you manufacturing or printing? I don't know. Is it woven into your web or is it printed onto the web?
It's printed onto the web. It's called a sub dye process.
But of course,
so another more big words. So we dye into it. So they all come white, and then we dye whatever brand colours they want.
And is that done here or abroad? Where?
Both. We can do. Well, we haven't done it. Sorry, when I say here, we do it with the company that I bring in from in the UK.
Yeah.
And they can do it locally. But a lot of it will be done if it's volume based. We'll do a lot of that in China in the factories that we have over there.
But if you've got the Aviva Stadium and if you've got DAA and if you've got all of these big names, that just means one thing to me. You're going abroad.
The goal really would be to go abroad. Yeah.
How are you going to do that?
I would love to take on the UK market because I think we have really nailed the market here with the forecourt and the NQ merchandising side of things. The Irish people, we have some of the best retailers in the world.
Now, I know you're saying that because you have to say that, but is that true?
Yeah, no, I believe it is true. Even look at, I suppose, all those big companies like Primark, which are Penny's, you know.
We have Bridget Donoghue on.
Yeah.
She's our little queen of Primark, we like to call her.
Yeah. Well, I knew the family before, well, when they were friends of my dad. You look at Dunn Stores, huge success, Spar, massive success across the world, you know, and these all stemmed here. Like Musgraves is such a big, big group.
Yeah.
These are all like Irish-based retailers who come up with some. We're just good at retailing. We really are, and I'm a firm believer that we're better than a lot of other large countries. I was brought over to America to look at Circle K's impulse buy queuing systems with my expertise.
Because they are Canadian, aren't they?
They're a Canadian company.
Yeah.
They have about 14,000.
Pushtard is their original name, isn't it?
Yeah. I think
how many?
About 14,000 outlets throughout the world. I think. Now that's
Did you start drooling at the idea?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking forecourt. They have great foresight, though. They can see that the forecourt industry is probably an industry that they might want to change in the far off future. Sorry, that's me speculating.
Well, I see what you're doing.
With electric cars coming in.
We had that chat with Brian Donaldson of Maxall and about the future. But that was electric future. But I think it is more likely to be a hydrogen future. So you'll be back into the forecourt again. So I think you're safe.
Yeah, hopefully. Please God. Because then we can still corral you and make you buy impulse stuff.
And I still hate you.
Yeah.
So what are the chances that Couche-Tard stroke Circle K might bring you to the United States? And Apple Green, of course, are big in the States as well.
They are, and the UK as well. So if things go well with those, if we're invited anywhere, we'll go. And I think
You see, that's like if we were invited. What are you doing to get invited?
I've been told that I'm politely persistent. And I have no problem knocking on a door and saying, we'd love to have a chat.
Yeah.
How I got the introduction to Apple Green is on LinkedIn. I sent a message to... he's the founder of Apple Green, and his name
Bob or Joe. There's two fellows, aren't there? Joe and Bob.
gone out of my head. But anyway, I sent such a message.
I should remember. I media trained them about 25 years ago. But
I sent a message that I'm a small Irish company. This is what we do. We'd love to have a conversation with you. That was just before we went into lockdown. So we didn't get it out of the traps then. But as soon as we got back into kind of slowly opening up and things getting kind of back to whatever the new normal is, we got an invitation. And I like to put my money where my mouth is.
Of LinkedIn. Fantastic. Yeah. Just simple as.
Yeah.
And what did you say in that little LinkedIn message?
It just said, I'm a small Irish company. We work within the forecourt industry. We're in X amount of stores throughout the Irish Republic, and we'd love to have a conversation with you because we think we can help you in your business and help you increase your revenue. And I got that. Thank you. That's lovely. We'll be in touch. And sometimes you get that, you think, okay, that might turn into nothing. But then I got a call from one of the area managers and head guys in retail operations. And we got the conversation going. Lee is his name. Lovely, lovely guy. Very smart guy. And we got the conversation going. Obviously, it took a couple of years, a year and a half or 2 years.
Did it? I was going to ask you that question. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's not an overnight success.
No, none of it is. It's a long sales process. But once we got the opportunity, I always like to put my money where my mouth is. And we always say, okay, we'll put our queuing system in at our cost to prove that we can increase your sales. And if we don't increase your sales, I'll take the system out and we won't invoice. But if we do, we're invoicing you.
Okay, that's fair.
And we'll roll on.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Now, you said the Republic. You haven't gone into Northern Ireland yet, have you?
Only with the cinemas.
Okay.
So we haven't gone in a big form.
Is Apple Green and or Circle K up there, do you know?
Circle K is not in the UK.
Yeah.
Apple Green is in the UK in a big way.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully we'll
that's
go
an opportunity
side.
For you. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what the last question is, because I've already warned you of this that I'm going to ask you, and I hope, unlike others, that you remembered. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
My wife.
Okay. That was quick. Yeah. Did she tell you to say that? Or?
No, she didn't. She didn't.
Why would you hire your wife? And you better name your wife because she'll hate you even more if you don't name her.
It's Agnieszka Fitzpatrick, but Aga Fitzpatrick is my wife's name. Like the cooker, I always say. And we have a little joke.
It's
like
when I'm out, either.
People say, oh, you sell poles. I said, I also married a pole, but I won't sell her. So,
and why Aga?
My brother always said to me, goes, if you can't do something, you're not good at something, hire the best person to do that for you. And she's very good at doing the things that I'm not good at.
And she's not in the business .. yet.
No. I think being an entrepreneur, having your own business, being very, you always look at the risk of what you do. You don't always get it right. And most of the time you will. But when it comes down to risk, I'm very much a family man. Aga's does really well in the job that she's in. She's very highly regarded in the telcos industry. So would I love to have her? Absolutely. Could I afford to have her? Absolutely not. she does all the things that I'm not good at. And those two things together, mixed as a hybrid in a business, I think would change probably where QFITS is today, but I'm not willing to take that risk yet. And I don't think she is either. So maybe for longevity of a relationship, we'll leave it that way as well.
Maybe that's a good idea as well. Yeah, I often wonder about, we won't even go there. That is Mark Fitzpatrick, who is founder of QFITS. And Mark, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Great Business Show, Irish Podcast Awards 2022. Best Business Podcast nominee.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs.
However, BigRedCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRedCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
This viscosity. When you shave, you want the highest viscosity because it helps the blade run smoother. DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, has incredible viscosity. That's why DeFacto leaves your face, underarms or legs nick-free. Higher viscosity makes blades last longer. DeFacto is the best for your skin and your pocket. DeFactoShave.com.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
I often do MC at business events, and I love having the chat with people afterwards about their businesses, the good, the bad, and the ugly of it all. One of the questions I'm often asked about by those business founders is about branding, brand promotion, and even brand names. When it comes to brand names, I give the same piece of advice to one and all. If you're choosing a business name, get two cheap bottles of wine, lock yourself and some pals in a room, and don't come out until you've agreed on a name. Simple as. However, Gerard Tanham is a man who is probably aghast at that advice. That's because his company, Island Bridge, specializes in branding, and he says about himself, "What I do best is brand building, that is, helping my clients become the natural choice of their customers." Gerard Tanham, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks very much, Connell.
Now, you know, because I've already prepped you, that I've got a little sting in the tail. Before we begin, I learned two things about you from LinkedIn. One is that you have a few degrees, but the one that caught my eye is criminology.
Yes.
Out of Hong Kong. Where did that come out of?
Well, that came out of the fact I spent 10 years working in Hong Kong as a senior inspector of police. So you didn't pick that up. It's in LinkedIn if you dug back a little further.
How fascinating. How did you end up as inspector of police? Now, well, were you a policeman inspector or an inspector of the police?
No, I was a police officer.
Were you?
In the rank of senior inspector.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, for those of you who haven't seen him, he's a big lad, so I'd say he could probably put manners on you. And how did you end up there? This is completely irrelevant to what we'll be talking about. But
it is and it isn't, because it was happenstance. I finished college here in Dublin in 1988 with a master's in philosophy. And at that time, a master's in philosophy didn't appear to equip you for too much in the real world.
And Ireland in 1988 and Masters of Philosophy probably exactly. Not going anywhere fast.
Exactly, yeah. Particularly as there were Masters of Philosophy in every pub in the country. But and of course, yeah, economic prospects weren't good. I spotted an ad in the Irish Times inviting applicants for the role of Inspector of Police in Hong Kong. And the big attraction was opportunity to learn a new language, learn management skills, learn a little about the law, and work, you know, with a unit of 36 officers after training. So it was hugely appealing to me, because it suddenly opened up a whole new world. Yeah. And like a 23-year-old, loves the idea of kind of heading away somewhere new.
Yeah.
So that was it. So
it sounds very exciting, because I also saw a second thing.
Yes.
And you aren't expecting this one. Were you or were you not a member of the 1983 All-Ireland Schools Soccer Championship winning team?
I was.
That's up on your LinkedIn.
Yes, of course.
That's called sad.
Yes, yeah. Well, of course, it found its way onto LinkedIn a number of years ago, in the sense that I added it to my profile. I did it for a couple of reasons. It's funny, in Ireland, it's changing a little bit, but in Ireland, there's a lot of store set on school achievements in rugby, clearly. For example, so you'll hear people dining out for the rest of their lives on their junior cup with...
Boring for Ireland, yes. Is what you really mean, yeah.
And not so much for Gaelic football, hurling or soccer. We were a team at school. I suppose the most famous of our number was Niall Quinn.
Okay, another big lad.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was a significant achievement. I was number, you know, kind of 12 or 11 on the team typically. So I was on the bench more than on the pitch. But, you know, it was a group of young fellas who pulled together and pulled off something significant.
Have they given you any business because of the mention?
No, not directly. Not directly. However, what I did discover many years later was that out of Drimna Castle came a significant number of captains of manufacturing businesses in Ireland, because there were two fantastic maths teachers. And whilst Drimna Castle isn't you know, kind of mapped in the business world, very rare to come across somebody from Drimna Castle, up to a point. And then at a certain age, you suddenly find them heading up these wonderful businesses all over the country. Why? Because they were trained in maths, went on and applied that maths in an environment.
Can you remember the name of the teachers?
Yeah, John.
Exactly.
Well, John Flood was one, and what was his first name? Malloy. He was also the soccer coach.
He probably had a nickname anyway.
He did. He was called Stiff.
As you do.
Because he was a big guy, built like the proverbial brick house. And apparently he was given his name because he had a very small car. And when he was easing his way into this little, the front seat of his car one day, an eagle-eyed pupil spotted him, and thereafter he was called Stiff.
To both of them, well done. I hope they're still with us. And yeah, they were planning or developing the future of the country indirectly. Branding is what we're really here to talk about.
Yes.
We've kind of gone around the houses a bit, but I do love this stuff. Branding, do's, don'ts and whatnots.
Well, before you get kind of close to the do's or the don'ts and whether it's a good idea to lock yourself in a room with a bottle of, or two of wine cheap wine to come up with your business name. The do's and don'ts always relate, as they do in most parts of business, to, you know, the purpose of the particular tool that you're about to use. And brands and branding are a tool. They're a business tool. The reason I say they're a tool is that, very simply, branding is all about that relationship between the person buying and the person selling. And brands, when we think about a brand is reflects a relationship. It may be a relationship that's already kind of up and running, or it may be a relationship that's proposed. So when we talk about do's and don'ts, really what you're asking is that what should I do in order to build a relationship, and what shouldn't I do to undermine or damage a relationship.
In particular with early, very early stage companies, even companies just starting off, maybe just a dream.
Yes, yeah. Well, I suppose that the most important thing when you're starting out from a branding perspective is to have as clear an idea as possible from the very beginning about what a great customer looks like. One of the things that I'm always amazed by is that you meet startup owners, and they have great ideas about, you know, the product they're bringing to market, the need generally in the market that they're going to meet, and very little understanding of what a great customer looks like. So usually what they do is they start off by identifying a customer who's almost kind of the first person that comes to their mind. And they don't dig deeper and ask themselves, like, what makes this person a great customer for my business? If you don't ask those questions, what often happens is that you buy customers, because that's what happens when you advertise. You're spending money in order to buy a customer for the business that can't afford you. So you spend a lot of money identifying, finding, attracting, winning over customers who can't afford you. And I don't mean necessarily they can't pay the price tag, but they can't afford the requirements you have of them as customers. So what I mean by that is that too often people choose customers who are looking for cheap service, for example, or they're looking for a product that's going to last, you know, 6 months or a year. Now, if you've invested in your business, if you've invested in your product, in your service, heavily in terms of ensuring that you do something better than others, that you last longer than others, whatever those things might be, you cannot afford customers who don't value that. So a great customer is one who values most what it is you value most in terms of what have you have invested most in your product or service. So that's the starting point. And as far as I'm concerned, far too many business owners, if you want to talk with the don'ts, they start labeling their business or naming it. They start describing their business. They start developing design, advertising in the wrong places to people who are not the best fit for their business.
Who advises you, or not you, who advises one on who your best customer could be?
Well, you can do it yourself by a very simple exercise. In my experience, and I'm sure it's yours too, Conal, there are five characteristics a great customer has in any sector, in any market, right? The first is that they are the customer in that market who most needs what it is you have to offer. Most needs, not kind of could do with it, what most needs. The second characteristic is they most want, because people often underestimate the power of want. Want is a huge driver of the appeal of something, the attraction towards something. I must want it, not only need it. The third characteristic is they most value. They have to value what it is you have to offer. They must be prepared to prioritize that in whatever application or part of their lives they're going to use it. The fourth is they have to be willing to engage with you on the terms on which you do business. And the very last one, which sometimes maybe should be the first, is they have to be able to pay. And I don't mean by that they have to have the money in their pocket. But if their own procurement policy, and I could be talking about, you know, a homeowner as well as a business owner, if their procurement policy means that they are unable to pay what it is you ask, for your product or service, they're not a great customer. So by
that's pretty basic.
Yes.
In other words, like, they can't afford you.
Yes. But sometimes when we think of affordability, we think in terms of does the person have the money in the bank or in their pocket? That's it's really not about affordability in that sense. It's that, are they able to buy? So say, for example, if we look at a small business, a small business may have set a budget at the beginning of the year for what they can afford to spend on advertising, for example. And no matter how wonderful the advertising is, if it costs more than they have budgeted, they are unable to pay. Now, you might say, well, look, you could reach into the back pocket and you could take a little bit of extra. But if their procurement policy is such, and people often forget that. Now, households have a procurement policy. They don't have it written down necessarily, but it's there. And my mother had a very powerful procurement policy when we were growing up, was that there was any amount of money for the things that she thought was important, education, sport, good food, as opposed to not good food. And her procurement policy meant that she didn't buy biscuits in the shop. She didn't buy fizzy lemonade. And we often wondered as children. Now, there was always money for that on holidays, because holiday spend is different. So my mother's policy was very clear to us. Now, when I was a little kid, I thought she was mean. And of course, as you get older, you realize, no, she just has very clear policy on what she spends
and
what she doesn't. Exactly. So you could look at my mother as an outsider and you can say, well, she can afford, you know, she could afford those biscuits, she could afford those cereals, but she wasn't able to pay because her buying policy meant she wasn't able to pay.
Now, we love having people like you here because we love getting free advice. You see, we can't afford to pay you, but we'll take the advice for free. A brand. Tell me a great brand and tell me a very poor brand and how to make a poor brand brilliant. Easy.
Well, funny enough, one of the brands... From a technical perspective, in terms of how they've achieved what they set out to do, one of the great brands in the Irish environment, and of course now Europe-wide, is Ryanair. And Ryanair seems to break a lot of the rules of branding. Their visual identity isn't particularly attractive or compelling. Their color scheme isn't especially engaging. But what they have done, and of course we associate it with Michael O'Leary, and he can take a great deal of the credit, is that they have been absolutely clear about who their best customers are. And they have been absolutely clear about how they win over and keep those best customers. So I'm often amused when I hear people giving out about their experience with Ryanair, because Ryanair are very clear in their communication. Now, I don't like Ryanair, and I fly the airline as little as I can. But from a, if you look at it in terms of that relationship that they build with their customers, the Europe is full of people who were able to travel when they couldn't afford to or weren't able to under the previous or under competitors, you know. So that's an example for me of a kind of a surprising one. I don't like them as a brand particularly, but I have great admiration for the way they have stuck to their guns in terms of communicating what they do, why it matters to you, what it costs, etc., etc.
And built a mega business.
Exactly. So in terms of brands that I don't admire. Well, you could almost take your pick from the banks.
Would you rebrand the banks here? There's a question. Like, they haven't covered themselves in glory.
No, and you see, again, this is where we come back to, I suppose, what's at the essence of a brand. I won't work with a business or a business owner who are not committed, genuinely committed, to the relationship with the customer. I don't mean that they can't make a mistake. I don't mean that that they have to be perfect. But I need to see the commitment in everything they do to their customer, to the relationship with the customer. And that relationship has to work for both parties. If it works for one at the expense of the other, it's not a relationship that's going to be sustainable. So, I mean, my short answer is no, in the sense that I'm not convinced that the banks, by and large, are committed to a fair, fruitful exchange with their customers. I'm not convinced of it.
So therefore, a rebrand would be a waste of time?
Yes. I mean, sorry, it mightn't be a waste of time from their point of view, because they may win over more customers. But we're seeing it even in the manner in which, you know, Ulster Bank is exiting the country. You know, they will have made great promises to their customers. They will probably have looked after their customers pretty well in many ways. But the manner of their leaving is dreadful. So I don't see any commitment in many of the banks to their customers. So that for me has to be the starting point. So when you ask me, would I rebrand? You know, would I rebrand a cigarette company? No, for the same reason. For me, a rebrand is really about helping a business to make it clearer to their customers or would be customers what it is they do, how they do it.
Who could use you, do you think, for their betterment? Somebody that you would work with, that you say, do you know what? That is such a dreadful brand. I'd love to work on that one.
That's an interesting one from that point of view. You've put me on the spot a little bit.
That's all right.
I've always had a great kind of affection for what I regard as kind of great Irish legacy brands, and many of them that I'm going to mention are already doing a great job. So in a sense, I'm not sure how much I could add, but I love, you know, brands like Ballymaloe. I love brands like McCambridge's Bread. Louis Copeland. You know, a lot of those great businesses. And whilst I think they've done a fairly decent job at bringing their kind of legacy into the next generation, I'm still not sure that they have really captured the essence of the relationship, the great relationship they have with Irish people or further afield. I'll tell you, actually, no, a great brand that is going to pot is Avoca. And it's not a surprise. They were bought a number of years ago by a company that doesn't understand brands. And there's all sorts of evidence, anecdotal and also from my own experience, that they're slowly but surely losing the essence of what made them a great brand. And what made them a great brand was that sense that you were in your mammy's kitchen and you were going to get a massive helping of goodness, right? Probably too much, right? You know, the doggy bag was probably invented for Avoca, right? And you can see they're cutting corners. You can taste they're cutting corners. And it's because somebody in there doesn't understand brands. They understand the name over the door, but they don't understand the promise that they've made to their customers.
So fix it for me.
Fix it? Well, the very first thing they could do, and they could take a leaf out of Avoca, you know, 12 years ago. We're certainly entering into a period of time where things will be seen as an extravagance. Certain things will be seen as an extravagance. But what we know through thick and thin is when businesses give back a sense of generosity, a sense of sharing, a sense of rapport, real rapport with our customers. And Avoca did that 2008, 2009. Another brand that did it, I regard it as if not a great brand, certainly a very good brand, is Insomnia. Because back in the 2008, 2009, Bobby Kerr very sensibly decided that, you know, his customers will no longer be able to wander in and have a cup of coffee and a sandwich every day, because from a budgeting point of view. So what he did was he created meal deals at a fixed price. So for, I can't remember what it was, we'd say for $3.50 you could get any coffee, any pastry, for $4.50 or $5.50 any sandwich, any coffee, and any coffee, yes, a double this or a, you know, with cream or extra, et cetera, any. And of course what he did was he allowed his customers to continue to enjoy their treat, their sense of, you know, a nice cup of coffee, nice sandwich. And as a result, he retained and grew his business through very difficult times. And so to a large extent, you know, it's not a secret. Avoca has traded for, what is it now, 15, 20 years off that sense of maternal generosity. And very simply, Avoca need to rediscover that, to reconnect with it.
And they might need a new owner, though, to do that, would they?
Yeah, possibly, because one of the things with, and it's the beauty of what I do in many ways, because people often say, it's very easy to copy that. It's very easy to copy that strategy. But you know what? You can't, if it's not in your nature. You might do it for a short while. You might pretend. You go through the motions. You follow the, whatever those rules are. But then you find somebody sitting there, usually a CFO or somebody sitting there, and they'll say, oh, that doesn't make sense. Because they don't get it, you know. And I'm very fortunate in that I get to work with many, you know, business owners who get it. They get what their customers need, want, value, what they're willing to engage in and what they're able to pay for. And it makes my job a pleasure, you know.
I said earlier on in the lead in there that if you're thinking of a brand name, go into a room with two bottles of wine. In a minute, just really short, tell me how to choose a brand name by your way.
Very simply, or maybe not so simply, but the principle is simple, which is write down on a piece of paper what relationship you're looking to have with the customer. Have an understanding of what role you're going to play in their lives. And I don't mean the whole of their lives, but we say in financial services or in a local bakery or whatever it might be. And then sit down and you know, with a pen and paper or with a whiteboard or whatever, it doesn't really matter. Just start scribbling down words that mean something to you and to your customer, as you see it, that will help to communicate that. It doesn't have to be, for most businesses, it doesn't have to be the cleverest name. We're not trying to out Coca-Cola Coke here, right? What you're often doing for the vast majority of businesses, they're not looking to be celebrity brands. They're looking to brand themselves in a way that makes sense to their customers. So identify a name that communicates something of what it is you do for your customer. Brand names that really work, and I borrow from Winston Churchill, who knew a little thing or two about communication and about memorable communication, is he says very simply, if you're choosing words for anything, for any message, choose short words, choose old words, by which he means, in his case, he meant more coming from the Anglo-Saxon. The Anglo-Saxon words are old words. They mean something. There's a kind of a heft to them. So choose, you know, place names, people's names. People's names are great because my name isn't a great name for a brand, Tanham. My surname isn't a great name. But one of our clients, going back many years, is Louis Fitzgerald. And Louis owns a number of pubs around the country. When he was making his first foray into building his first hotel, he was very reluctant to put his name on it, because up to that point, he didn't attach his name to any of his pubs. And I said, Louis, running a hotel is a very different thing to do than running a... You're asking people to put their head down on your pillow and to feel safe and sound. I said, you were blessed with a great name. So he named the business the Louis Fitzgerald Hotel.
That's the one at the Nice Road, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And
it's funny that you mentioned that, because there was a discussion at the car, let me put it that way, only a few weeks ago, about whether that was a good name or not name.
Yes. And it's a great name.
And my co-driver said, not a good name.
No, well, I disagree.
Okay.
The success of that hotel is evidence of why it's a good name. It's a great name because it evokes hospitality. It's an old Irish name. And Louis, my second son is called Louis. Louis is a great name in the Irish context. If you think of all the Louis, the Louis Walsh, Louis Le Broquet, and Louis Fitzgerald. It's such a great name. And it's memorable. People don't tend to forget a name like that. So, when you're choosing a brand name, it has to be easy to say. It has to be easy to hear. It has to be easy to read, because all of those things matter, and they matter more and more in...
And spelling.
Yes.
It must be easy to spell.
Exactly.
Anyway, we're out of time.
Oh, dear.
I know, it's okay. I will have you back, don't worry. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Well, I racked my brains on this because you did give me fair warning. And of course, I hear it at the end of your interviews. And I don't have a very neat answer. What I'm inclined to say is that I hire in a heartbeat somebody who comes from a different background, has different experience to mine. I hire, and we don't do much hiring. Island Bridge, we're a small company and we don't hire too often. And when we do, it tends to be almost by kind of osmosis. It's that somebody comes and does a bit of research work for us. But I'm always looking for people who have a different point of view. We started the conversation by discussing my time in Hong Kong. And I found when I came back from Hong Kong, I was equipped with something which many of my peers in Ireland who had spent their young adult life in Ireland and were into their 30s and maybe had traveled a little but hadn't worked elsewhere. What I found was that I had a perspective. Now, it didn't mean that I knew better, but I knew differently. So when I go to hire, and I recommend this to everybody, and we are blessed in this country, it doesn't feel like it at the moment, but we are blessed with so many newcomers. Now, some of those newcomers by way of Ukraine will rightly want to go back home. They don't plan to be here for too long, but many of them will stay. We know that. Many of them will stay. And that's a wonderful opportunity for us as a country to hire them. Right. The same for those in provision centres. These are people who have tremendous perspective, tremendous experience, and will help business owners and Ireland as a society to see things differently and to see that there are two and maybe more ways of coming at a problem. And that for me is invaluable. I don't want to hire somebody like me, except I do want to hire somebody who has another perspective.
I love the answer, but you're not giving me a name. Are you going to give me a name? Because I like the answer, but a name?
I don't have a name because...
That's okay. Yes. No, I understand exactly what you're saying. And anything we can do, obviously, for our Ukrainian brothers, obviously, is a very, very positive thing. And I'm going to let you away with that one. I don't normally let people away with that, you know. Jared Tanham, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 104. Slowly, 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 we are converting you, our lovely listeners, to pushing the share button. Good God, Jared, how can I get people to push the share? They all will happily say like. They won't push the share button. It takes them the exact same amount of time. But we're slowly getting them there. The share button sends a link to all of your followers. And not that you're self-interested, but LinkedIn thinks that you are a superior being if you post what is deemed relevant content. And that's what we are. This helps make your LinkedIn profile even more prominent. So it could help you get that next big job or that big contract or who knows what, just by sharing. And your followers will love you for sending them Ireland's Best Business Podcast. Because that's the nomination we got from the Irish Podcast Awards. And you can also vote for us for the public choice vote at irishpodcastawards.ie. And here is another request. Why isn't your business advertising with us? Big Red Cloud does. So have Microfinance Ireland, Virgin Media and Udar Osnogatachta. We seriously doubt if any other channel can deliver a truly engaged business audience at our incredible value for money prices. We record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where sound engineer Brian Begley and studio manager Peter Rice create the sound that helped us win that Best Business Podcast nomination. If you want to record a podcast, use the team here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios. If you'd like the Media Group to produce a podcast for your business, then talk to me, Conal O'Moran. Find me on LinkedIn. And of course, all of our great business insights and tips are brought to you, as always, thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil. They back us. Please back them. DeFactoShave.com is where you will find them. And don't forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have a regular column all about the podcast. So from me, Conal O'Moran, Míle Buíochas for listening. Agus slán tamall.